a little bit intense there. Sorry. We're used to the ways and means gavels, not these intense rules gavels. Good afternoon. We're going to open the House Committee on Election and Rules Subcommittee on Campaign Finance Reform. Today is April 11th, 2005. As promised, we are going to have a public hearing on this, House Bill 3458. Is there anyone signed up, Cletus, to share their thoughts with us? We do have... why don't we invite up Norman Terrell from Multnomah County. Howdy.
Chairman Smith and members of the committee, my name is Norman Terrell. I'm from Multnomah County, and I was also a member of the Secretary of State's Public Disclosure Panel, and you've heard from me before. I wanted to just give a couple of brief thoughts today, extemporaneously perhaps, and see where we want to go with this. I like the proposal that you're working on very much. And it seems to have a lot of good things in it. There's a lot of detail that you went through in your last hearing. I actually listened to all 4 hours of it last night and read the bill, which I think I need a medal for. But
no sympathy here. Slow move.
There was a couple of thoughts I had about first. If you wouldn't consider the other ideas that came out of the public disclosure panel's deliberation, we worked on those for months, and there's a lot of good ideas in there. For example, there's a definition of candidate-controlled committee, which was targeted at solving a particular problem in our public disclosure law where a candidate can... control several committees and hide the sources of contributions to his candidacy by essentially laundering the money through those other committees. And at least with this definition of a candidate-controlled committee, then you could follow the money, if you will, down from where it ended up to back to where it came from.
Let me ask a question right there really quick.
Sure.
In this... bill, do we define candidate control committee?
Representative says no.
Do you have a suggestion for us?
The suggestions were all contained in SB 822 and SB 160 also.
Okay.
Likewise, you know, we suggested that terms of loans be disclosed. And this was targeted to solve another problem where candidates were getting loans that weren't really loans. And it wasn't really clear in the public record that those loans were really outright contributions from big contributors, whereas they were essentially hiding the purpose and source of that money. And there's some other things in that report that you've already seen and probably should go back through if possible and take a look at. There's a lot of good things in there, and they have nothing about giving advantage to one party or another or any candidate or another. In fact, the public disclosure panel was very well balanced between different kinds of political groups in the state, and that's why we were able to come to consensus on those proposals.
On the terms of loans, one of the major loopholes I see is you could list out that certain dollars are classified as a loan, but what happens if the loan is forgiven, or what if the loan is just considered delinquent and non-collectible?
At some point,
I'd be interested to hear how the Secretary of State has handled non-collectible loans.
Well, in any case, they're defined as a contribution, whether they're repaid or not.
Got it.
It's just a matter of whether or not the public understands that a particular loan is a legitimate loan or one of these sort of phony loans that isn't really a loan but a gift, and you may or may not be repaying it. And it depends on, you know, the exact provisions of the loan as to how that is perceived by the public. If it was a bank loan, I mean, that's obviously a legitimate loan,
right?
But, you know, what I call a phony loan is one that is given and not expected to be repaid necessarily.
I may be a little naive in asking this question. What's the rationale of a committee listing a contribution as a loan rather than as a contribution?
Well, the public perceives necessarily a loan that that it probably will be repaid, but in these cases they aren't. They're really a sham. It's a way of kind of hiding the real purpose of the money, in my opinion.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the two Senate bills in front of me, but I'm not fast enough with them to know where individual provisions are. Is this provision in one of those Senate bills?
Yes.
Your recommendation related to loan disclosure?
Okay. Yes, Representative Hunt.
Do you know which one?
Do I know which section? No. I don't have them in front of me.
Section 6.
And, for example, there was another provision about disclosure of large contributions late in a campaign within 15 days of an election. That could be really very easily done with an electronic disclosure. And we had suggested that they be reported within one day because those kind of huge contributions tend to distort what happens late in a campaign. And the public has a right to know those kind of maneuvers. Ready to move off of that. There was a couple of particulars in the bill. In Section 7, about random review of campaign contributions and expenditures. There's a phrase in there that limits it to state offices. And my question is, if it's good for state offices, why not all offices? In fact, if you have that phrase in there, it seems, I'm not sure of this, but it seems like contributions from other kinds of offices in the state that are also disclosing electronically won't have any review. The authority has been removed, I think, from the local filing officers, and I'm not certain that anybody has the authority to review those anymore. But I could be wrong about that. In any case, it seems like the same system of random reviews could be used for over a wider set of candidates and elections very easily without the exception. And lastly, in Section 19, subsection 4, there's a number of exemptions for electronic disclosure that are for other kinds of campaigns, local petitioning campaigns and statewide petitions, and there doesn't seem to be any rational reason why those kinds of C's and E's ought to be exempted from the statewide electronic system. They have the same sort of benefits, it seems to me, from the rest of the kind of reports that the Secretary of State handles. And so the question is, why should they continue on the paper system while everybody else gets the benefit of the electronic system? And I think there's some other places in the bill that also occurs.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Could you note that section again? Because
I had Section 19, sub 4, is one place where this comes out. And there's another section that exempts local referenda and initiatives and recalls and statewide petitions while there's still a petition. So I'm open for further questions if you wish.
Any other questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned these candidate-controlled committees, and I was just trying to thumb through our bill, seeing where we might address this. And I'm trying to get at what you're talking about here. Are you saying that a candidate should only really have one PAC that they control? Is that...
Representative Holder and Chairman Smith, it would be my opinion that the candidate should only control one committee, but that wasn't what the panel decided. The panel decided to have this addition that if a candidate controlled more than one committee, he would label those other committees as candidate-controlled committees. And that's as far as they were willing to go. And at least that way the money could be followed back to its original source by starting with the candidate and then going back to the candidate controlled committees and then back to the original source of the contributions to those controlled committees. Mm. Otherwise, it becomes a way of hiding the true source of the campaign right. contributions. And this was a problem in a recent governor's election, as I understand.
Mm. Any other questions? Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we're now going to hear from the good chairman of the House Committee on Elections and Rules.
Well, whether it's good or not, I'll need that.
You sound like you've got a little bit of a cold.
I do. Yeah. I do. I must have caught it in Heppner.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't pick that up in Heppner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, State Representative Derek Kitts, House District 30, Hillsborough. I just wanted to, first of all, just take this opportunity to testify on the record. I haven't spoken to this subject matter or to the committee as a whole, and wanted to take this opportunity to do so, hopefully with my cold medicines as I'm sitting here spinning. well, I can articulate my gratitude to this committee, Representatives Greg Smith and Hunt. Thank you for your willingness to serve in this capacity. This is above and beyond the call of duty, and you guys have done a remarkable job and have been there since the inception of this need, if you will, from the initial work group that was formed to this subcommittee, and now hopefully passing on what I think is a great bipartisan, comprehensive and thorough bill. This bill has been vetted out with both sides, Republicans and Democrats, the Secretary of State's office, as other interested parties. I wanted to briefly, in a blanket statement, address some of the concerns and points that were brought up by the previous testifier. While valid, and maybe some substance to the concerns, this bill before you today was designed at the request of the Speaker and the Democrat leader to address several different items specifically. There are other bills out there that take into consideration other concerns as related to campaign finance, and I think those bills have some merit as well, and we'll probably see go certain directions. We have been instructed by the leaders of both parties to address specific issues, and this committee has done a remarkable job at that, and I apologize for my absence at the last committee. I had an orthodontist appointment, for the record, but I'm happy to be here today and hopefully watch the culmination of several weeks of work and a lot of hours, intense hours of, I wouldn't even call it negotiations, but thoughtful discussion about what needs to be done with our system, realizing that 99.9% of us will never, ever incur any one of these issues, and it's because of a 0.1% that would maybe even addressing these issues. And I think that this committee has done a wonderful job, and I'm proud to serve with you, and I'm proud to say that you guys have done a remarkable job. And if there's any questions for me as regard to where I stand on this bill, I think I probably answered them, but if you have any other questions, I'm more than happy to. So with that, I would just like to say thank you to all of you for putting in this time. I'd like to thank for the record, Representative of the Secretary of State's office, Representative Limbach, and Fred Neal. Jesse is not here, as well as the Secretary of State himself, who has been very open to discussions as related to this. I think you guys have got a good product here, and it's something that not only you, but the entire body in the state can be proud of. So I'm happy to be a part of it.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Kitts. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. With that, is there anyone else out there that would like to testify during this public hearing? Seeing no one, we're going to close the public hearing. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3458. And what I'm gonna start off with is a statement of reminding each of us that we are all in this together on trying to restore some credibility back to the legislature as it relates to campaign finance reform, and hope that we can continue to work in just an open manner to find a solution that will work not only for this committee, but for both chambers of the building and for the Secretary of State and for all the citizens of Oregon. So with that, I will turn to Cletus, who will perhaps get us started on what we need to be doing to prepare to move House Bill 3458 up to the full committee on elections and rules.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if the committee's had an opportunity to read through the work draft that's been presented by Legislative Council. This would be the recommendation by the subcommittee for the full committee to be incorporated into House Bill 3458 for the full committee to adopt as a bill.
Perhaps what we should do is bring our Legislative Council up to walk through the proposed amendments to House Bill 3458, walk through that, and then see if there's any discussion. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office.
Excuse me.
The Dash 1 amendments that you have before you are based on the notes that I took at the subcommittee meeting last Thursday. I'm hopeful that they represent what the committee agreed to do to House Bill 3458. They have not been reviewed by the editors in Legislative Council, so any errors in them are my responsibility completely. So I thought I'd just take you through what they do based on what I think we decided on Thursday. All right. On page one of the amendments, the first thing that happens is we are completely deleting Section 3 of the bill and replacing it with this new version. And Section 3 is the section that relates to the single bank account that PACs and candidates have to establish in a financial institution in this state. And the differences in this Section 3 in the amendment and in the bill are as follows. First of all, the new Section 3 doesn't require the treasurer to actually deposit the contributions. Anybody can deposit them on behalf of the candidate or the committee. Second, you don't have to deposit them within 10 days. You have to deposit them within 7 calendar days, which ties us into all of the other deadlines in the election laws currently. Third, on page 2 in subsection 5 of the amendment, it specifically says that this doesn't apply to in-kind contributions, which obviously cannot be deposited into a bank account. So that particular piece is clarified. And then finally, in new subsection 4 on page 1 of the amendment on line 21, this new language attempts to say that this section doesn't prohibit somebody from making a cash expenditure while they're out on the road to buy food or something like that and then receiving reimbursement from the PAC. The concern there was that the original bill said that all expenditures have to be made by check or debit card. This attempts to accommodate people who are making a cash expenditure for office supplies, for food, for, you know, some minor, relatively minor item, and then being able to get a reimbursement from the committee. So that's what's going on with the first Section 3.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You did a very nice job of incorporating all these random notes that we all dumped on you about that section. The one question I have, I'm just making sure it is covered. It talks specifically about check and specifically about debit card or other electronic transaction. Is that for a credit card expenditure? Is that an electronic transaction because it doesn't come directly out of the account, or does that just count as a check that therefore pays off the credit card? I guess I'm just a little, that's the one piece I'm a little concerned about that section.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, as I understand it, the committee determined that credit cards would not be covered by this because they're not tied specifically to an account in the way that a debit card is. So I think my understanding of this language is that no, it doesn't allow an expenditure through a credit card in the way that it would for a debit card.
Follow up.
Maybe I misread what I thought our consensus was on that then, because I thought clearly check, debit, but I thought there was support for saying there needs to be a way for candidates to be able to have a credit card expenditure for a campaign account, and frankly I think it's even cleaner if it's then that credit card account is then just paid off directly by the campaign instead of through the other subsection you've got here related to reimbursement from the campaign. I mean, I can put it on my personal credit card and then get reimbursement for it under this, but it doesn't look like I can put it on a campaign credit card and then just have the campaign pay that off. And I thought there was a support among this group for doing that.
Perhaps you can introduce yourself.
Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hunt. It was a long evening. and I believe that council's reflected.
Can I give your name, sir?
Yes, sorry. Fred Neal with the Secretary of State's Office Elections Division, Campaign Finance Manager. I think line 22 of page 1 of the amendments does cover the credit card expenditure by someone other than the PAC itself. There was some discussion Thursday that most PACs, banks are smart enough to not give credit card accounts to. And that almost all credit card expenditures in political campaigns are made by individuals, and then they're reimbursed by the campaign. And in fact, we have quite a bit of now some PACs, trade association PACs, union PACs that are large and ongoing may very well have credit attached to their debit cards. And the language in the amendments would proscribe a credit, incurring of credit through a credit card of the PACs. You're correct there. So is that your understanding? So,
are we missing something still?
Yeah. Well, it just seems like it's a question of do we want to allow campaigns to have credit cards that are then just paid off by the directly by the campaign account, or only allow personal credit cards where basically the person is then reimbursed. My bias would be for the former, but as I understand what he's saying, that would be prescribed under this bill.
Okay. Share with us really quick on the review of transactions. We say on page 3, line 3, the secretary may require a candidate or treasurer of a political committee to provide documentation of not more than 8 transactions. I want to make sure that applies to all candidates as I read this.
Mr. Chair,
It says may require a candidate.
Section 7 applies to only candidates for state office.
Okay, but it applies across the board to all candidates for state
office. Yes, I tried to address that. On line 1 and 2, where it talks about the review of the statements filed by principal candidate committee of all candidates for nomination or election to state office.
One other area on this, and I'm sure it's right there. How often will these reviews occur?
Mr. Chair, Section 7, as you may recall, applies only for a year while the paper filing system is still in effect. Under subsection 2, on lines 5 through 8, these reviews occur during the 3-month period following the primary and the general election.
And then once it's electronic, how often will it occur?
Quarterly.
Quarterly. Okay. Is that okay with the committee?
For the record, Mr. Chair, Fred Neal again. I'd like to clarify on Section 7. We've been reading that as that we, and especially because it stretches out our work, but we were assuming no more than 8 transactions for each of the reports, first, pre, second, brief, post for the election, first, pre, second, brief, post for the general, with three months to do so after each of those reports.
Okay.
Not up to 8 transactions for the primary election, up to 8 transactions for the general.
That's correct.
Okay.
Once the system is online, does the committee feel comfortable with quarterly? Is that too much, too little?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Chair Pitts.
The understanding that I had, and maybe Mr. Lindbeck can answer this, is that originally, in light of the paperwork that would be incurred by the Secretary of Secretary of State, that was going to be permissive. The Secretary of State shall to may conduct reviews, given what their need was. Therefore, it didn't have to happen every quarter. It could happen every quarter if they so chose. That was my understanding in deference to the Secretary of State's office in dealing with that sheer amount of paperwork from what would amount to, I believe, 94 candidates filing in up to 8 copies of checks. That was my understanding on the original language, and I could be wrong. I haven't bothered to look it up, but that exact concern was addressed by making that language permissive from shall to may, as memory serves correctly, and I believe that was our discussion.
I would be fine. I'm fine with that. That allows you folks to determine the need and the frequency. Would that be okay?
That would be fine with us, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Of course, it does. The language does say shall review the reports, and then it says may require up to 8 transactions. So,
okay, did I misread it then?
Shall conduct review.
It's tricky. But that's Ted.
Okay. Well, as long as it's saying, tricky Ted. Follow up, if I might.
Please follow up.
Of all people that are not tricky.
I know.
Ted is straight arrow Gennaro. The fact that he was even associated with tricky, I think, is making him blush.
me right for sitting next to Pareto.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that. Is it just shall conduct reviews? Yes, I believe that I am. It is saying what I said that it should say. I misread it when I reread it to say that it didn't say what I thought it was going to say. So I retract my question and apologize for wasting the committee's time on something you already stated. So it's my cold medication. I'm staying on it.
Representative Thatcher.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hate to rewind, but I wasn't quite done with Section 3. And my only problem is that under this section, I'd be required right now to reopen my campaign account because I have $2.86 or $0.52, something like that, left in my account. and it was going backwards into the negatives by me leaving that account open. And now I will have to either loan myself, again, a minimum amount of money to have an account open, and I'm not sure what the purpose of that would be. So I'm just wondering, it seems like you can address that by saying as long as there's, I don't know, something more than $2.56 in an account that that you would require an account be open. I don't know. What do you think about that? It just seems kind of ridiculous to have to, loan my account to keep an account to be compliant.
Representative Thatcher raises an issue here in that it does require by September 30th of this year that every state and local political committee, including principal campaign committees, would have to have a dedicated bank account. And my understanding, I think Mr. Martinez was here earlier, is that banks charge for the service of providing an account. And we have quite a few campaigns that are just basically sitting there. They have not discontinued with us. I know on Thursday we testified that a committee to avoid bank charges can discontinue. And when they're ready to begin campaigning again, anew, form a new principal campaign committee if you're a candidate, or a PAC if you're a group of individuals, and open the bank account then. Otherwise, yes, you would be maintaining it. I think some of these committees are not discontinuing because they have outstanding loans that they didn't make to themselves, but somebody else did to them, and until they are repaid or forgiven, they can't discontinue. So they have zero cash in any account, but have outstanding obligations or accounts payable. And so this would create an issue for them, too, and we're not quite sure how we would enforce that. We had some staff discussion this morning. Would we be imposing up to $250 per violation penalty? And in most of those $250 situations, the first offense, we don't find anything, and then it's $75 and on up to get people to do it. But this is like kind of a one-time only, open the darn account. But if you don't have the money, and it seems especially for committees that are under $2,000 in activity, why would you require a bank account at that point? Unless it's to make some assurance that there isn't something less than $2,000 of untoward hanky-panky going on.
This is John Lindback, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's Office. I think the intent behind this section, if I recall correctly, is to keep people from commingling their campaign funds with their personal account. Mm-hmm. So I would chime in with Fred here and say I'm not sure that the intent was to make everybody have an account. You just can't commingle your campaign funds with your personal funds. So you may want to look at the wording of that, and that would, I think, resolve your issue.
Thank you.
Any committee with a cash balance?
Well, but
at least it narrows it down to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The intent is stated accurately by Mr. Lindback. Now, if in fact the language of the bill does not address that, that there are, I don't think there is anything that we could accurately articulate via words to cover everybody. For example, if you said an active account, but an account that is in the negative that you spoke of, that's only reported because it's in the negative, and have an account open only because it's in the negative, would that be an active account? Because it's not active, it's negative, it's doing nothing. Same as Representative Thatcher has indicated. I would have to, I mean, as much as it pains me to trust you, I would think that the ability in some form of rule via the Secretary of State, I mean, what we're saying here is that if you're running for office and if you have a balance, you have to have a designated account. You can't put it in your own personal account. If somebody like Representative Thatcher, for example, were to have an account of $2.58 that was drawing negative interest and she shut it, just so long as she doesn't take contributions in, she's not in violation. And I think that there is some interpretive rulemaking that, I quite frankly, I think common sense could prevail. I don't know how you could accurately cover every scenario in writing, I think he'd be, I mean, just because of the situations that we've brought forward here today.
I know that, Fred Neal again, I know that new committees have some trouble opening an account because they don't have a taxpayer ID number, and we kind of get together with the bank, and as soon as they file a statement of organization with us or with their local filing officer, we try and get them through that process. But I don't know how easy it is to close an account and then reopen a new one ongoing. And so in Representative Thatcher's situation, I mean, I think having a cash balance is pretty clear, but then to try and come in with some nuances by rule of how much cash balance you have. Do you have enough cash to pay your monthly checking account charge, or if you had $2.89 and you gave it to, say, the church of your choice or, you know, charity of your choice, that then you no longer had a cash balance, but then the bank's still going to charge you $8 a month simply for having the account open. Representative Thatcher, you had some thoughts.
Oh, you were just mentioning how my bank was actually accommodating me and saying I could have that account number back when I reopened, but they were just accommodating. They were accommodating that. I can't speak for all banks, but my particular bank was doing that. So
that may work. Just having a cash balance, then they'd have to have an account.
I mean, we could certainly do that by rule, Representative Kitts, or if the committee feels strongly that they want to prescribe this in legislation, you could change that sentence so it says that each political committee that makes or that receives donations or makes expenditures shall establish a single account. So therefore, if you're not doing either, you can close out your account, start a new one when you start getting active again.
Representative Hunt.
Does the language here, though, that talks about the political committee shall establish a single exclusive campaign account to the financial institution and shall maintain the campaign account, does that give you any ability to make a rule that says, you know, it's only if it's above $50 or $500? I mean, it doesn't seem like you're given much flexibility there for rule.
Well, normally we would interpret that to be to do exactly what it says, but if Representative Kitts is telling us what the intent is here in the legislative history, that we could make a rule and we could certainly try to do that.
I'm struggling with, you have $2 in your account. That's not a campaign finance issue. That's a you managing how you're going to manage your account with $2 in it issue with your bank. Isn't it? Well, I mean, and whether you ran it down to that or you know, what have you, I mean, that's not a campaign finance issue.
Yeah. But it is a financial issue in that if you have a cash balance, you have a bank account, the bank's going to run up charges. Many of our annual September supplemental reports are just that, 10 months of $8 service charges to the bank, and that's it. I mean, they're running down their account. Obviously, the other problem we have with some committees is that they chronically file negative cash balances on their senior reports, and we know that the bank's not letting them do that. And so there's something wrong with their report. It's a good clue. So I think in conversation here with counsel that we would need, the language is so clear in Section 3 that we probably need some outs to either so that on line 7 on line 6, each political committee having a cash balance shall establish, or each political committee having a cash balance of X dollars or more.
There you go.
Shall establish, and then pick a number.
Touch the banks and what their minimums are.
You could say because candidates who are their own treasurers and don't raise or spend more than $300 in a calendar year aren't even a political committee.
Well, and we also have amendments talking about the $2,000 threshold on reporting under electronic. Until I have kids and I was thinking bionicle. Sorry. Anyone with kids would understand that.
GW over there. Electronical filing.
So So what's the will of the committee on Section 3 then?
Make that exception.
Make that exception?
Yeah.
What amount?
Where's Tim Martinez?
$100. Does that work? $100?
Mr. Chair, I would only submit, depending on the various bank fees or what they charge for maintaining a checking account or anything of that nature, not knowing how long the session may go. If it were $10 a month, you would have exhausted that last session almost within $10. So I don't think you run into any kind of sketchy stuff if you were to make it something like $200 or $300 to allow just a variance there, not knowing what may or may not come up. You may have an overdraft charge, just can bump it down. Or so I think that a $200 or $300 threshold, I don't know of any bank maintenance fees that are more than $10, $12 a month. So,
Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just going to throw out that I believe in this bill right now that once you raise or expend in aggregate $300, you're required to file a statement of organization as a PAC, and so $300 is a somewhat of a magic number for being responsible as a PAC. Just thought that might...
Representative Thatcher.
Well, and I think that as long as you're... You could have $100 and still be actively making expenditures or receiving contributions, hopefully not during session. But it seems like that should be the criteria, is whether your account is, if it's actively active, making, if you're receiving money or making expenditures, that seems like that should be the criteria.
Other than financial fees?
Well, and that's why I heard the language having a balance above, if we say 300. The minute you got that first $500 contribution, you'd have to have
a maintenance
in an account. So as long as you're not accepting any contributions and you're below $300, it seems like that would cover. But the minute you got any kind of sizable contribution, you would then immediately have to go into the shall establish an exclusive campaign account.
Are we reporting expenditures? Because, you know, if you maybe you have $200 in your account, you're making expenditures, are those now not reportable?
I think you still have to report them.
If you're going to report all.
Okay, just making sure.
What was the language that was shared before?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, you shared language before. You said each political committee...
Having a cash balance of X dollars amount shall establish... I think he may have been referring to mine, which was each political committee that accepts donations or makes expenditures shall establish a single.
I think I prefer that
account.
One.
Yeah,
that gets to the heart of your intent, I think, because if you establish a threshold of say $300, that is you are in essence saying it's okay. For if you keep that balance at less than $300, for you to commingle those funds, and if the whole idea is to stop commingling of funds, then you want to do it completely.
Can you state that just one more time?
At the beginning of Section 3 there on line 6, where it says each political committee shall, you would simply insert each political committee that makes that accepts donations or makes expenditures shall establish a single exclusive campaign account.
I think Mr. Lindbeck's talking about in a particular period of time or at some time, because that's what defines the political committee, is receiving contributions or making expenditures. So without having some period of time, which means then you've got a running target, or the stricture of the legislature to have a dedicated bank account is if you're making contributions today or in 2005 or 2006, and so you better have a bank account. You shall have a bank account, and your expenditures shall be out of that account.
Sure, kids.
You know, I think we're really splitting hairs here. I mean, the bottom line is, each political committee shall establish a single exclusive campaign account in a financial institution as defined in ORS, blah, blah, blah. The financial institution must be located in this state, blah, blah. We're all clear on that. That's all fine. A political committee shall maintain the campaign account in the financial institution in the same name of the political committee. For this purpose, the subsection acronyms may not be used in this name of the political committee. Budget your money. It's a requirement to run for office. Maintain your account. You know you got to do it. End of story. If you run it down to 258, loan yourself $100 and pay it back at the point in time when you can reimburse yourself. I mean, that's what I would say. I think it's very clear. Maintain your account. I mean, I think very few people shut down their accounts just because we go into legislative session. I mean, I think that, unfortunately, you got $2.58. If you want to claim the contribution, I'll make it. But I think we're really splitting hairs and going to cause more of a nightmare on your end of, was it $2.58 or was it $258, and where do we draw the line? It just simply says, maintain your account. You have to maintain it. You have to keep it open. And you have to keep the records, as we'll go into further here. X, Y, and Z. I think that really simplifies it and puts the burden on those whom the burden should be on, and that's the candidate that's making the expenditures. I mean, I would, and if we're talking such a nominal amount of $100, which would, in theory, if yours is $8 and we're in session for 6 or 8 months, you know, you're talking $48, $56. So I think that for the purpose of the legislation, that probably simplifies it easier to put that burden back on us. I could be wrong, but that's what I would think, instead of spending an hour on whether or not.
Moving on.
Moving on up.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we leave Section 3, I'm sitting here looking at the notes what we were charged with doing and commingling of funds, and wanting to take the suggestion of the, at least for us committee, to consider the candidate-controlled committee, because I was not aware that a candidate could have more than one PAC. And the issue being that those PACs can be used primarily to commingle money and to hide money, I'm wondering if we should consider bringing that rule to bear restricting it to just one committee for each candidate.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Chair Kitts.
This was brought up before. You have essentially, let me give you an example, Future PAC, you have Majority 2004, are all, you know, you have Majority Leader, you have Democrat Leader, the Republican Leader, are all on those signees. If, in fact, you want to start a PAC, Citizens for a Better Eugene, for something else even other than this, your name's on everything. You can't just go start an anonymous PAC and just have this PAC out there with no names associated with it. You know, PAC X that does X things, started by X man. I mean, that's so. I think there's a little bit of a misconception out there about. I mean, and not to mention that with this particular bill, we've got to be very careful that we don't go outside the scope of what we've been tasked with. Mm-hmm. As a committee, and you specifically as a committee, in keeping it with the germaneness of the speaker and the Democrat leader's thing. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad suggestion. If there's a disclosure issue that we're not addressing, then by all means, a bill should do that. This may just not be the vehicle to do that.
How do we want to handle Section 3? What's the language? Let's get moving. I'll share with you my comfort is with your suggestion, but I'm open to where you want to go. Representative Thatcher, your thoughts?
Well, that's kind of what I thought. It made sense, too, but then you still have that period of time issue to deal with. So
we'll go to Rep. Hunt and then Chair Katz.
I guess I was fairly persuaded by his statement about, you know, if candidates know that this is going to be a part of the process, then they should budget, and Chair Kitts has offered to give Representative Thatcher an extra contribution for her campaign account.
On the record.
Didn't say how much. I want to see verifiable bank statements.
But especially if our issue is transparency and clarity, it does seem to be, although I was tracking along before Chair Kitts made that suggestion with one of these two other options, I guess I am persuaded that the cleanest would be to say shall, and as long as candidates have enough advance notice, then we can get contributions from Chair Kent to bump up our
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I specifically offered Representative Thatcher. The last person I want to show up on the CNE is Dave Hunt.
All right. I'm going to ask Chair Kitson if you could repeat the concept one more time so I'm clear on it.
Leave it as is. and leave it and require. I mean, the language that Ted has come up with is very clear. I would say leave it as is, and basically putting the burden on the candidate to, as Representative Hunt said, maintain. You know this is going to be a requirement, so make sure that you plan accordingly. Maintain your account for when you come into session, knowing you're not going to be taking contributions.
Without being too anal on this, can we just put each political campaign receiving financial contributions shall establish a single? No. Why would I establish an account if I'm not receiving money?
Why would you be a political committee unless you were receiving money? I mean, that's definitional.
Right.
Thank you. Let's move on.
Mr. Chair, one additional.
Can I go back to Ways and Means?
That's up to you. We can be here all night.
One more thing to consider. As Fred points out, there's currently the statute that exempts people who aren't going to spend more than $300 from even having to get into the system. They don't file a statement of organization. They are, as Fred says, off the radar. You might want to consider adding a subsection to this Section 3 that says that those folks don't have to establish this account. They are technically still candidates, but under the definition, but since they don't file a statement of organization, it would seem to make some sense to say they don't have to set up a bank account as well, since they're not moving a whole lot of money around. As soon as they go over the $300, then they're subject to everything in the campaign finance laws, and we could write in language that says if they go over $300, then they have to do the bank's account and everything else they have to do. It's a policy decision.
What do you think, Representative Hunt?
Yeah, sounds good.
I just have one question.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that it's a requirement, but once they hit the $300 threshold, you know, I don't know if it's necessary to make a statement that they have to somehow account for that first $300 as well in their first reporting.
Yes, it's current law, Mr. Chair, Senator Holvey. If they go over the $300, they have to start filing all the statements that every other candidate has to file. And before they get to $300, they have to keep the same records that every other candidate does as well.
Okay.
They just don't have to file statements until they get to $300.
Just wanted to make sure that was still the...
That's Section 23 of the bill on page 13.
I'm assuming over the last hour and 3 minutes, everyone's had an opportunity to look throughout the amendments to House Bill 3458. Is there any other comments you'd like to share, or are there areas you'd like us to stop and go through?
I have not had a chance to read through, but if we could just go through, just have them go through.
Okay, let's
explain this. Chair, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, what do you want to move to next?
Sections 4 and 5 of the bill, which are the sections that require candidates and PACs to tell the Secretary of State some information about the single bank account. What we've added here is additional information that is required to be disclosed under the amendment. And this is on page 2 of the amendment, starting at line 9 through 15. Basically, the candidates and PACs would have to supply the name of the financial institution where the account is located, the name and the number of the account, the name of the account holder, and the names of any person that has signature authority under that account. The second piece of that is an exemption from the public records law for disclosure of that particular account information. It would prohibit the Secretary of State from giving that information out except when they need to do it for purposes of enforcing the campaign finance law. So they, for example, they could give it to the Attorney General's office.
Help me here. I thought our comments were we were not going to include this, but we asked to have OBA come and talk with us about this issue.
Yes, I had conversations with Mr. Martinez of the Oregon Bankers Association. I left him a message last week, talked to him this morning, and at one point, I think Representative Smith was...
Right, I was out there.
Yeah, okay. That Mr. Martinez said that we do need to have the account number. The Secretary of State does have to have the account number to give it to the bank. Otherwise, the bank would require a Social Security number of the treasurer, and he cautioned, and I certainly think that we agreed with him, that opens a can of worms that we don't want to get into, of having to deal with Social Security numbers and maintaining confidentiality of those. And so Mr. Martinez has looked at this language and thinks that it's appropriate. I know he had a meeting with the governor this afternoon. So
the frustration I have is I thought we as a committee asked for this not to be in. And so I'm frustrated to see it in here. Now, to bring it forward and to have it added in later is fine. But I really thought we asked for this not to be in here.
Mr. Chair, apparently I misunderstood. As I understood it, the Elections Division was going to check with the bankers, and I was to proceed on the recommendation that they came up with. So clearly this language could be modified to make it read in whatever way you want it to read.
How do you want to proceed forward? You know, the committee's thought at the time was that there was a little bit of uncomfort about having the account number available, or potentially available, even if it was confidentially held. And part of my discussion, I think, was come back to the committee and assure us that information will be held in confidentiality. Representative Pastor.
Mr. Chair, whenever you write a check, it's pretty much, whoever you write it to, it's almost public knowledge at that point anyway. So,
you know, that's a very good point. As you're posting those checks on there,
we wouldn't post the checks online, the check numbers, and we, in talking to staff this morning, we would, because this kicks in September 30th of this year, should you have signed, he died by then. that we would simply have a supplemental statement of organization. It would be a separate form that would have this information, and we wouldn't enter any of that into the database. It would
How
be
are you
held
sure
separate.
That the number doesn't float off?
Float off?
Float off. I send in my bank statement.
We're not getting your bank statements.
You request them
only if we have cause to do a desk review or and inspect the records further.
What I'm trying to get at,
those bank statements are, once they're submitted to us, public record.
Right, but if you want our account number, what am I missing here? How do you ensure that those never float off?
We because of the wording here, we do not disclose those, and so they're held in a confidential binder. They're not in a computer, and the only time that account number would be known is if we needed to engage in some enforcement action, such as, and this is my understanding of Mr. Martinez's suggestion that we need the account number, is in order to subpoena the records from the bank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also submit that in as we move forward, Section 7, where this is for review, the Secretary may require a candidate or treasurer of a political campaign committee to provide documentation of not more than 8 transactions. Of those 8 transactions, as Representative right. Thatcher has already said, you would then be provided the checking on account number along the barcode. So maybe 9 through 15 become redundant, because you can get it at any point in time you want it anyway, just by Section 7.
But you could still black out the account number. Representative Holby.
More important is this
kind of question.
Well, I was almost going to say the same thing that Representative Kitts just said, is that I thought it was. We decided that the bank account statements were actually part of the documentation that was going to be required of the 8 transactions.
is going to be left up to the Secretary of State of what those are.
That wasn't part of the documentation that you were going to use to verify the 8 transactions then, that they actually happened in an account.
Checks and invoices.
Mr. Chairman, John Lindback again. Representative Hovey, I'm wondering if you might be thinking of the sections that required all candidates to file bank statements with the division, which...
I remember deleting
the original,
that.
Yeah, and we took that out.
Yeah, we took that out, but I thought that the bank statements were going to be part of the documentation required for the 8 transactions.
No, it was our understanding is that it's either canceled checks or receipts,
invoices
in order to show documentation on those transactions.
Okay, my misunderstanding.
And then if they raised an issue, we may come forward with the committee and say we need to see more, which may or may not include a bank statement.
Oh, maybe that's where the bank statement came in then, is if you saw a discrepancy that you needed to further investigate.
Right. Representative Thatcher.
I was going to say also, you have a heck of a time blacking out those account numbers when you write your check to the Secretary of State for your filing fee and having that work. Anyway, I'm just saying that the account number is floating out there regardless.
I just have a philosophical problem with providing a bank account number to a government body, whether it's the Secretary of State or any government body, until a situation warrants that I would give it to that government body. I'm from Eastern Oregon. So that's the dilemma I'm having. I'm not denying the fact that accessing the account number isn't simple. You could run a credit check and pull an account number. I just struggle with that. If the committee doesn't, I'll move on. Why don't we keep proceeding forward?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I think we've covered Section 7 and 8, the changes there. The next big thing is on page 5 of the bill. We deleted Section 11, which required the filing of the bank statements. In lieu of that, the amendments add on page 3 of the amendments, line 24, a new amendment to 26200, which directs the Secretary of State to adopt rules describing the materials, including financial institution account statements, copies of checks, other things like that, that they could require candidates and PACs to submit when the Secretary needs them for enforcement.
Any questions on this? Keep proceeding forward.
The next change is Section 14 of the bill. On page 6 of the bill, lines 14 through 16, that's the discussion about what kind of information needs to be provided for expenditures. There's a whole city-county issue. As I understood it, the committee decided that for expenditures in an aggregate amount of more than $50, then the candidate or PAC had to provide both the city, county, if the pay is not in the city, and the state, where the pay is located. That new requirement applies only for $50 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And that same change is made in Section 20 of the bill, which is the electronic filing version of the same statute.
Any questions, any comments?
Well,
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. On Section 19, I thought we had a discussion about making a threshold of $2,000.
That's next.
Okay. I thought it was going to be 19.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hunt.
As I'm looking at this, the at least on our version of the amendments, we've got some things that are in bold and some things that are not. I guess I'm confused at this point about what, because some of the things that are not in bold are things to be inserted.
Ms. Chair, Representative Hunt, yes. Anything that's bold is a brand new, totally new section. That's why it's bold, so that they stand out just like in a bill. Anything that is not in bold is inserted into existing ORS inside the bill. That's the difference.
let's keep proceeding forward.
Page 4 of the amendment is the new Section 20A. It puts 26112 back into the bill. That is the section under current law that says that if you're not going to spend over $2,000 in the total reporting period, then you don't have to file the detailed contribution and expenditure statements. So what this does for electronic filing is say that if you are not going to spend more than $2,000 total in the calendar year, you don't have to file the electronic statements. You just file one statement of limited activity for the year. Anytime you go over the $2,000 threshold, then you kick into the normal system. I do think, if I remember right, that I want to also add language to Section 19 of the bill, if I haven't already, which says, all it would say is except as provided in ORS 26112 to specify clearly that there's an exemption. I think I left that out. And, Mr. Chair, the remaining changes in this bill are simply technical changes because the bill as printed repealed 26112. This amendment puts it back in as amended. And that's it.
Perfect. Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that last Thursday was a pretty long session, and I do remember we had considerable conversation about candidates' reimbursement for mileage, and we sort of talked about that, and I'm trying to find out where we're addressing that in the bill to clarify it a little better, because we had a difference in and this speaks to the double dipping line. I think it's in section 17, I think. But do we need any more clear definition of mileage expenses and how they relate to state's reimbursement of mileage? And we talked about having to have mileage logs. Is there still any, is that all done in rule? Or where do we get an indication of exactly how that's going to be prescribed?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, the amendments don't change Section 17 at all, because Section 17 refers to specific reimbursements, and for members of the legislature, that's going to mean coming to the Capitol during the interim for the per diem that you get there and any mileage expenses that you are reimbursed for during the interim. That's what Section 17 is going to cover. As we mentioned at the last meeting, that's what the current administrative rule in the Secretary of State's manual covers as well. I think that the new amendment to 26200, which gives the Secretary of State the authority to ask for additional materials from candidates for purposes of enforcement, would allow them to ask you to supply specific reimbursement records so that they could tell whether or not you had violated or not violated Section 17.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when a candidate or a public official is in session as opposed to during the interim, do we address them being able to use campaign contributions for mileage expenses at that point? When they are on per diem from the state and getting a clear definition of what that per diem covers and what it doesn't cover?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holding, no, this bill does not address that.
Do we need to address it? I'm unclear as to how we account for that to the Secretary of State's office. If, in fact, we're using campaign funds, I don't know if it's a common practice. I don't know anybody that does it. I'm just throwing it out. Is there something that needs to be addressed there that goes back to this double dipping that we're supposed to be banning in the use of campaign funds and also getting reimbursed from the state for per diem, which is supposed to, as I recall, covers lodging, food, and mileage. It doesn't cover mileage.
Well, it covers $91.
Representative Polvey.
It covers $91, and that's for all of those purposes.
Right. The existing election law, of course, prohibits the personal use of campaign funds, and this bill doesn't change that at all. The per diem that you received during the session is a per diem. It's an amount of money that could be considered additional salary. It is not tied to any specific expense that you may incur, which makes it difficult then to draft something that applies to quote-unquote double-dipping, because the money is given to you. There are no restrictions on what you can spend it on. During the interim, however, when you come to Salem for a meeting or drive a distance, you are specifically, in that case, reimbursed for mileage for a specific purpose. It's different during the interim because the money comes to you. You may spend it on whatever purpose you deem necessary.
Representative Thatcher.
Sorry, it just seems to me it could go back to one of those transactions you want to prove. Line 24 on your, goes up that high, asks you to prove this $250 expense, and you just have to document it that, well, okay, this is above and beyond my per diem. I think we really are already addressing that.
Representative Hunt.
I guess my interpretation of the per diem is different from what you've stated. Because I'm looking at the federal definition of per diem, which I thought was the same definition that we were using, which talks very specifically about it just as a simpler way of reimbursing for it, but still of dollars that are going specifically for, and I don't have the federal statute in front of me, but I'm sure it outlines a series of specific things, which is the same during the interim. I mean, during the interim, when we have a committee hearing, we get that same per diem as we do during the session when we get per diem. So I don't believe it is additional just compensation that we can use. That may be how we function, but I don't think in terms of definition that is the way it was intended. Otherwise, this should just be additional salary. It shouldn't be per diem. By the nature of the word per diem, it's a I think that's intending to be meeting specific expenses as defined in the federal tax code, which I have no idea what those are because I don't know the federal tax code.
I'm not sure.
Yes,
Representative Hunt. Basically, in the IRS code, I'm not an IRS licensed person, a state of Oregon. Used to be, not anymore. But the federal guidelines are that if you don't show expenses against a per diem, all of it is income, but you must show legitimate expenses based on IRS code against it. So in other words, if you get $91 and you spend $71, you now have $20 income. But if you get $91 and you spend $121, you now have $30 additional expenses you can deduct when you itemize your tax return. So that's basically how the IRS looks at it. It must be a legit expense that follows the travel rules under, I forget what section is in the IRS code. But if you don't have any of those expenses, then the entire amount is considered as income and you're taxed.
That's correct. Representative Holdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I just have one other glitch that's sort of bothering me a little bit with this bill that I think I'm not sure if we really addressed it in our meeting Thursday night. I think we briefly touched on it of trying to find out what we're allowed to do and what we're not. So if the chair would indulge me, I'd just like to ask a question and then follow that up.
You bet.
Are candidates able to basically charge the campaign for renting space in their personal residence to run their campaign out of?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, yes, the Elections Division has determined that a candidate may charge the campaign account for the use of, at not to exceed fair market value, the actual square footage in a personal residence used for campaign purposes. In lieu of the campaign, the intent of that interpretation is so that the candidate does not have to go out and rent such a space, can use available space, and then because it's deprived of
the candidate is deprived of that space for residential purposes, charge the campaign for that amount. That is our current interpretation.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just submit to the committee that I think for trying to provide some real clarity and transparency to the public that we should disallow that practice. I for one think that if that were to happen, that a candidate would be a non-reimbursable in-kind contribution of using your residence. I just think that clouds the candidate using campaign money to survive on, to live on, because you're using it to pay your mortgage. I mean, if you want to rent a place, go rent a place and not really use your personal, supplement your personal house with that. Because I think that just really creates stigma in the public's eye that we as candidates aren't being upfront and we're really making a living on campaign contributions by covering all our expenses. I would just submit that, and
I think that's a very, very good point. And I was ready to move this thing. Let's go.
Just as a clarification, what you're saying, the Secretary of State can do that by rule, and has already. I don't know the exact subsection, but they have a list of acceptable uses and a list of prohibited uses, and if that's something that doesn't need to be in the bill, the Secretary of State's office can do that by rule right now.
Well, it's not in rule right now, and I would think that they would need some statute to direct them to do that. I may be wrong, but
here's where we are, colleagues. We have proposed amendments to House Bill 3458. We are in work session. I would entertain a motion to amend House Bill 3458 with the proposed amendments that we came up with on Thursday.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move that we adopt the Dashwood amendments to... there's a script. I move House Bill 3458 be amended with the Dashwood amendments.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher has moved that House Bill 3458 be amended with the Dashwood amendments. Any conversation? Yes?
For the record, could I just clarify what we are going to change in the Dashwood version that we agreed to in this meeting?
Would you like to walk through your understanding of where we are?
Okay. Three basic things as I have it. Number one, we're going to amend Section 3 on page 1 of the bill to specify that the bank account requirement doesn't apply to candidates described in 260.043, which is the $300 candidates. Second, we're going to amend 260.043 to say that when they go over $300, they then have to comply with that bank account requirement and set up the account. Third, we're going to amend Section 19, which is the basic electronic filing section, to just state the exception to say except as provided in 260.112, which means that the candidates who aren't going to spend more than $2,000 in a calendar year do not have to file electronically and can only file their statement of limited expenditures. That's what I have as changes to the Dashwood Amendment.
Any discussion? Representative Hunt.
I'm happy to move this as an amendment to the bill. I guess my comfort level about moving the bill is very low right now. If for no other reason, then I don't think we've addressed the issue in 17 that we've talked about related to the issue of duplicate compensation. And based on the testimony we've had, maybe we've addressed it during the interim, although I'm still not convinced of that. But we certainly have not addressed it in terms of the session. I also am just really uncomfortable having walked in and got this six-page set of amendments with lots of technical deletions and references to ORS statutes, and not having a chance to fully read that and absorb it. So I don't know if your intent is to just move the amendment into the bill, or if your intent is also move the bill today.
No, my intention was to move the proposed amendments to House Bill 3458, have them come together, and then have a discussion among the committee as to what the next step would be on the bill. Any other, seeing any dissenting votes?
Mr. Chair, I was just wanted to follow up about the last piece that I brought up about the being able to pay your, you know, rental space. You know, I really think that that's something that I thought we couldn't do, but you're saying that we can do that, and I would really like to see this committee, you know, make sure that that's the case, because I think it really clouds our appearance to the public if we're paying ourselves rent, just as we pay or are not allowed to pay ourselves for professional services. I strongly believe we should not be able to pay ourselves rent. And I would move that along with his dash one amendment that we have legislative council make sure that that's put into this bill somehow.
Mm-hmm. Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if it would be appropriate to bring up Mr. Sherrill, who served on this public disclosure panel. Maybe, I don't know if he didn't want to address that.
Okay, well, we have actually two motions now out on the table. I'm going to deal with the first motion first, the proposed amendments to House Bill 3458. Is there any other discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. We passed the proposed amendments to House Bill 3458. We now have a motion on the table from Representative Holvey. Representative, share with us one more time the nature of the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I respectfully move that we make sure or direct legislative counsel to add to this amendment provision that prohibits a candidate from reimbursing or paying themselves for the rental space of their own residence or the residence of an immediate family member.
Okay. How does the committee want to proceed on this? Do you want to have a written copy of the amendments to look at? Do you want to move based upon that discussion? I'd like to at least take a look at something.
Well, I've been told that that is a law, Mr. Chair, but
I'm not opposed to it. I just want to.
Yeah, but I just got a notion that it isn't the law that we're able to do that. So I would really like to clear that up for making candidates more accountable to the public and their campaign dollars.
Okay.
Especially since, Mr. Chair, since it's already been established that we have such a tricky LC writer here, we know.
You'll want to get that written down.
Representative Holvey, help me here. As a member of the Elections and Rules Committee, the main committee, is this an issue that should be addressed at that committee level, or do you want to have such a specific item placed into this bill?
Mr. Chair, I think that is appropriate for this committee, as it is banning candidate self-compensation as directed by the Speaker of the House and the House Minority Leader.
No problem.
Item number four.
Let's do it. So how do you want to state that one more time so we can all feel comfortable with it?
See if I can state it the same way twice, because
yep.
I didn't write it down. The motion was to prohibit a candidate to reimburse themselves or pay rent to themselves from their committee, or to pay rent or reimburse a family member for paying rent on their own residence or on a residence. So I didn't quite say that right, because I've got that cold thing that Derek has too. But
What if we had something that just basically a political committee,
Mr. Chair,
shall not? Yes.
If I could, yes. Just after sure, my conversation with Mr. Neal out in the hall, if all it would take is the Secretary of State's office to reinterpret the rule and say no, as opposed to yes.
Is that share with us real quick?
Yeah, Fred Neal of the Elections Division. Our rule, as enunciated in the Campaign Finance Manual, pretty much parrots the federal election, verbatim parrots the Elections Commission's language. But the way we've
formatted it and phrased it, we've used the in excess of fair market value to, sentence to modify both personal residence and other than personal residence of real estate owned by the candidate. We can rewrite it in the next adoption of the campaign finance manual to prohibit use of any use of campaign funds to pay for reimbursement of any use of personal residence of the candidate or a member of the candidate's family.
If I could just add one thing, I mean, it is a policy call. We agree with Representative Kitts. That is a policy call that the Secretary of State could make. We could make that policy call and just say you can't do that anymore in the campaign finance manual. So I guess your decision is whether or not you want to make that decision for yourselves or you want to ask the Secretary to consider that when we rewrite the manual, because we do that every 2 years.
Representative Hunt.
I would agree with Representative Holby. It seems completely consistent with banning self-compensation. It's just another form of compensation. I would think as long as we're doing these comprehensive changes, we should add it in. I don't know exactly what the language will say, but I assume legislative council will be able to interpret Representative Holby's language in a way that makes legal sense.
What if we just you get the intent of this committee on this issue? Now, I guess you're not ways and means. You guys don't work with intent here. Do you want to take 45 seconds and just write something up and hand it out to us so we can look at it? Is that I have no problem moving forward on that, but I'd like to see it in writing.
Sure, you bet. And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your indulgence. I just think that that is part of what our direction was, and I think to show the public in good faith that we're really trying to provide this transparency, it would be good to have it in the bill and not just hidden in a rule somewhere. I think that's the work of this committee to try to regain the trust of the public.
We're going to stand at ease for 3 minutes.
All right, a reprieve.
3458. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My motion to add to the Dash 1 amendments to be moved into House Bill 3458 is a motion to prohibit political committees from reimbursing or paying rent or monies for space used in a residence owned by the candidate or family member of the candidate.
We have a motion on the table. Is there any further discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved. Now, let's talk about the full bill. What do you guys want to do? Representative Hunt.
Well, I mean, in terms of Section 17, at least, I don't think we've addressed the charge, at least on that piece given to us by the Speaker and the Democratic leader. In terms of, as they said on their piece, banning double compensation for any expense.
Representative Hunt, we had extensive conversation on Thursday on this. I don't know if we could get a copy of the record on this.
Well, I was just given the audio tapes this morning, so I haven't had a chance to listen to them today, surprisingly enough.
Any particular question on Section 17?
It's just, as I understand it, it doesn't apply at all to per diem.
Here was my understanding, and I would ask for a correction if I'm incorrect. We received $91 per day plus mileage during the interim. Any expense in addition to that $91, we could use campaign dollars for. So if I rent a hotel for $121, I could write a campaign check for $30. And be able to use that to cover my hotel. I would not be able to write a campaign check for the full 121 unless I reimburse my campaign back for that $91. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Second issue really quick is on mileage, if I'm reimbursed at a certain rate from the state of Oregon, I would not be able to receive a reimbursement check from the state of Oregon for mileage and also charge my campaign account for the same use of travel.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. I think
So for the interim, Mr. Chair, it sounds like it's addressed. I'm just not hearing that this applies at all to the session.
Okay.
Which it seems like the same principle would apply in terms of per diem.
My understanding is during session, we receive a daily per diem that legislative council shared with us that they view that almost the same as salary, and that it's not dedicated to any specific purpose. And therefore, we currently have not discussed any language that would prohibit that, simply because during the interim we have it for specific uses. During session, we do not. Why don't we please?
Mr. Chair, as a policy during the committee's travels right now, is that no member will be reimbursed for mileage, because the state will provide transportation during a session to any meeting that we have. And if they request meals currently, there also taxes will apply to those meals.
Okay.
That's the current policy.
Okay. Any other question on Section 17? Representative Hunt.
The per diem phrase is no different between the interim and the session. It's the same phrase. It's the same use. I am completely baffled by the fact that we're getting two different interpretations as to how that would apply in terms of whether one is double dipping and the other is not. It's the same amount, same $91, same per diem, same use, same federal definition. How we would only apply that to a prohibition on double dipping during the interim and not the session, I do not understand.
Can you share with us your thoughts again on that?
Mr. Chair, it's easy to write a bill that applies to the interim because the statute specifically talks about specific reimbursement for specific expenses. As I recall the statute on per diem during the session, it simply says that you receive a per diem during the session. I don't remember seeing a specific federal definition or any language in there that limits the applicability of the phrase to any particular expenditure for which you are specifically reimbursed. It seems to me that it's a policy question for the committee. If you want to try and draft something that would apply both to general per diem payments that you receive during the session and the per diem that you receive during the interim, which you receive only when you are specifically reimbursed. Difficulty with that is, well, I'm sure that we could try to write something like that if that's the way the committee wanted to go. The difficulty is trying to understand how it's treated under the federal tax code, and how would the Secretary of State understand, and what kind of records would you have to keep to show that of the $91 you received on Tuesday, that X amount of that went for this expense and that you didn't then reimburse yourself from your campaign fund. It just becomes infinitely more complicated when the per diem that you receive is not dedicated to a specific purpose. That's not to say that we couldn't draft something that would work.
What if we were able to say that your per diem during session could only be used for hotel or temporary residences or for one-time meal expenses?
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that you could do that by amending the per diem statute. Whether or not that fits within the title and the subject of this bill, I'm not sure.
The struggle I'm having, and I'm being facetious, Representative, the struggle I have is I don't want to tell members how to use their per diem. I use my per diem. I spend it all down here. Other members do not. And if someone can live much more frugally than me, and use their per diem for other things, so be it. That's done in corporate America every day, and I don't see that as an ethical violation for someone to say I'm going to live on peanut butter and jelly rather than on a pizza.
I would agree completely, Mr. Chair, in terms of the per diem. The issue for me is not the per diem. The issue is the expenditure of campaign dollars for expenses that we as candidates have already received reimbursement for. through the per diem or through mileage reimbursement or through...
I think you have to define per diem then, because that knife cuts both ways, and you're going to have to define what per diem can be used for then. And if we want to go there, I'm fine with that. I use my per diem, so...
Do we have a reference? Do you know where in the statute the per diem issues for session and interim are defined?
I believe it's in Chapter 171 somewhere.
Yeah.
But unless I'm thinking about this completely wrong, it seems to me that you will have to impose some sort of record keeping on the expenditures that you make for per diem, so that it will be possible then to look at your campaign finance statement and see if you have in fact paid yourself twice for the same expenditure.
The more I think, I like this idea. I think we ought to do that. I think we ought to set parameters on how per diem can be used and have very specific allowable uses. It can't be used for paying principal mortgages, can't be paid for certain things, but could be used for rental property, could be used for hotel rooms, could be paid for one-time meal expenses. That's
Mr. Chairman,
what I use my per diem for.
Principal mortgage?
No, rental.
Mr. Chairman, this was discussed at length with the Secretary. This exact issue was discussed at length with the Secretary of State's office, Legislative Council, members of both parties, and the problem in trying. I mean, you have an infinite, literally infinite number of expenses that one can incur as a result of our job. It's infinite. It could be everything from spilling V8 juice in the house lounge on your shirt. I recommend it for some.
Every Monday.
I'm sorry, go ahead. The list is literally infinite. It could be a flat tire on your car on the way to the Capitol. It could be something, so therefore saying you must use your salary of $1,280 to pay for such things, but you cannot use your per diem for those, because we are in fact defining per diem to only be used for whatever that may be. It could be meals, it could be lodging, whatever it may be that you want to define that for, which is the problem that you run into, is to define, and in fact, if you use your campaign for something of any nature while in session or not in session, you're required to file that on your C&E, so it has nothing to do with a disclosure issue. It becomes a disclosure issue if, in fact, you do not do that. And so these are the... those were some of the things we discussed, is where do you define it?
I'd like to add a point to this conversation. I'm not sure why we pay per diem to those who are living in their residences. When I worked for Northwest Natural Gas, I was paid a per diem every time I had to travel out of town. I wasn't paid a per diem just to come to work on my normal day-to-day job. And so I think we ought to consider eliminating per diem for those who don't travel.
I have found, Mr. Chair, the provision of the statute. It is in 171.072. It talks about a member of the Legislative Assembly shall receive as an allowance for expenses not otherwise provided for a per diem determined as provided in subsection 9, blah, blah, blah. For each day within the period that the Legislative Assembly is in session. Yeah, that's pretty much all it references there.
Chair Kitts.
Thank you, and I appreciate the question, and I think that Representative Holvey is with his amendment, although I disagree with it. I'm not a voting member of the committee. understanding the logic and the reason for getting there. With that being said, the double dipping and that sort, which I'm very sensitive to, the per diem and the salaries of the members of this body have never been in question, nor are they, nor should they be. For if the $91 is of huge issue, or the $1,280 is of huge issue, then we should talk about a bill dealing with salary compensation for the legislative members and things attached to it, not simply trying to outline the infinite numbers of things that should be used, could be used, might be used, or prohibited from being used as related to this topic. And I mean, I'm more than happy to discuss the issue of salaries and per diem as how they're applicable to the financial well-being or the bottom line of the members of this body, because I think we are all grossly underpaid. So with that, I wanted to shed some background light on this topic and how it's been dealt with, and why what Ted's saying as far as the per diem as related to interim, where you're not required to be here and incur various expenses, is more easily defined, saying you're coming to Salem on this day for a purpose, you are giving this allotment and this mileage. And if in fact the state gives you this allotment and this mileage, you cannot reimburse yourself, because that is double compensation and double dipping, and that is prohibited by what we are talking about here.
I chair also on this, colleagues, each and every one of us are accountable to the folks who contribute money to our campaigns, and we're accountable to the folks who elected us. And I think with us moving to an online system to where that information will be much more accessible by the public, those who choose to make expenditures that are not in line with their district are going to have to face the music on those expenditures. I would care to contend we have taken great strides in making this process much more available to the public, much more transparent to the public, and much more easily accessible to the public. So how do we all proceed? Any other questions, I guess, on Section 17?
I just, Mr. Chair, believe that if you don't amend that, we're leaving a glaring hole in court that will not be consistent with the agreement that the Speaker and the Democratic Leader had.
Is that something that we can deal with when the Senate gets this and they take their cut at it and we come back together to work through it?
I just speaking for myself, I won't be able to support the bill without that provision in there. I think that's one of the key six provisions we've been given.
Well, let's work through that. Let's work through that. Tell me, because we want to make sure that this goes forward in a bipartisan way. Tell me, or tell the committee what you think you will need to do to make this work.
Well, my understanding of where the Speaker and the Democratic Leader were was saying that no campaign funds may be used for any expense that a candidate or elected official was already getting reimbursed for, whether that was through mileage reimbursement, whether that was through per diem, whether that was through, I mean, we could be being reimbursed for something else by an outside entity as well. But that we as elected officials cannot take a per diem reimbursement in one pocket and then pay for a campaign expense that was intended for. And the per diem provisions for the interim and the session are defined exactly the same way in state statute.
Tell me, do you want to try and create a definition for per diem?
I think there's already a definition in statute that refers it back to the U.S. IRS code.
Okay.
I think the issue is just saying that you can only, that I as a candidate or elected official, well, only applies to elected officials, I as an elected official can only expend campaign for an expense that I haven't already been reimbursed for, whether that's from per diem or mileage or any other source.
Let's play through this really quick. I'll come to you one sec here. How would we report this? How would we how do we account for this?
If I put on my C&E a campaign expenditure for something that would be a normal expense that the per diem is supposed to cover under IRS code, then I would have to have documentation that I had expended my full mileage or my full per diem or my full whatever it was for reimbursement. For the example that you gave, if I'm renting a hotel room in Salem for $121, I would have to have documentation. Not filed as part of the C&E, but I would have to have documentation that I could prove, once they go looking through my C&Es, that I in fact expended all my the reimbursement I had and still had expenses on top of that, and that was the only part the campaign paid for.
How do you balance the discrepancy between those folks who have to use their per diem to live here and those who are able to benefit from their per diem?
I think that's balanced already in the code because it's taxable for one group and not taxable for the other.
Here's the struggle I'm having. The per diem I receive, I use 100% of it to live here. I'm not convinced that folks who live in this area, who commute down here, even though that's taxed, use it. They're personally gaining from that.
So
granted, they pay tax on right. it, but they're still receiving greater personal compensation than a person such as myself who's using it simply to be here.
So if they are not using it, they should not be able to use campaign funds to meet any of those expenses.
What if we took per diem away from folks within a 60-mile radius of the Capitol?
Well, there's still, the per diem is to go for meals, is to go for expenses of being here.
What if we did that, though? What if we took the per diem away from a 60-mile circle around the Capitol and said, in the course of you doing your business, you don't need to be reimbursed for those expenses. You can bring your lunch from home. You can get home in time for dinner. You can eat breakfast at home, and you have your own bed. What if we took that per diem away?
I think that may well be legitimate legislation to pursue. I don't think is within the charge that the Speaker and the Democratic leader gave to us. Their charge was specifically campaign funds may not be used reimbursed expenses.
How do I know, aside from the issue that you're an honorable legislator, how do I know you're not using your per diem for personal use?
Well, the nature of the per diem is you do not need to keep documentation of it. This would say, unless you exceed that amount, unless you're spending campaign funds, and therefore saying that you have exceeded, your expenses have exceeded that amount. So the issue is not, for me, is not the per diem. The issue is, and I don't think that was the issue for the Speaker and the Democratic leader. The issue was expenditure of campaign funds for already reimbursed expenses.
Representative Holby.
Well, I was just listening to this, and I understand what Representative Hunt's getting at, but I'm kind of wondering, I would like the Legislative Council to comment on Section 17. Does not Section 17 already address what Representative Hunt's concerns are specifically, or is there a hole that needs to be accounted for?
Mr. Chair, it's Nicole, as I understand the section, it would not address the per diem that you received during the session because it is not a reimbursement for a specific expense. As I believe that same statute allows for activities during the interim. That's what this statute is aimed at, and it's drawn specifically from the Secretary of State's campaign finance manual, which also has a very similar provision, which says that you can't use campaign funds to pay yourself for a specific reimbursement for an expense that you have been specifically reimbursed. So, yes, I believe the answer to your question is if you want to cover the situation that Representative Hunt is describing, you need to do more in Section 17.
Chair Kitts.
I think Representative Hunt, and I don't want to speak for him, but if I misspeak, please feel free to correct me. Section 17 is essentially addressing half of Representative Hunt's concern, or and actually probably three quarters, considering we're a 24-month term, roughly six, give or take, maybe shorter, depends on when this committee ends. And what Ted is saying is during the 18 months that we're not here, per diem's very easily defined. It's expenses that are incurred as a result of being here, because you're here on one day. You drive down, you drive back. You have a defined amount of mileage that you require because it's a one-day gig, unless, of course, you need to stay the night because you're from Heppner or somewhere that's not conducive to travel. What Representative Hunt is saying, I think, is that per diem, while here, what he's trying to do is define what it can be used for, first. Second of all, saying that a campaign, even though the Secretary of State's office has already said that a campaign can be used for any expenses that are incurred as a result of your duties here. Dueling definitions. But what Representative Hunt wants to do, it appears, is define what per diem can be used for, which we've already said is an infinite number of things, and then ban the campaign from being able to either pay for, as the Secretary of State's office allows, or reimburse yourself if you pay for it. So you would have to do what Representative Hunt, I think, wants to do. Now, we disagree on the definition of double dipping. Or in this case, it would be require people to live on $1,280 a month, which is exactly what it would do. You'd have to define every permissible excuse or expenditure for the $91 and document it and retain it, and then not reimburse yourself for anything as related to what that list may be. And if Representative Hunt is saying food or mileage, you would have to define everything that per diem can be used for. Because right now it's not defined. It's saying it's in addition to your expenses, can be used for expenses that are incurred here. Again, I spill coffee or whatever on my shirt, I got to use my $1,280 to pay for that. I can't use the $91 per diem because Representative Hunt wants to define that. So that's the problem that you run into, as Ted has outlined, is if you're going to define per diem, then you can define what is a permissible or unpermissible excuse for reimbursement. And that's the problem with defining the per diem, per my conversation with everybody and all the parties here. It's not definable. I mean, you could define it, say food or meals and lodging. And therefore, you have to pay for that out of the $91. And so you pay for your hotel, you pay for your food out of your per diem. And you can't reimburse yourself out of your campaign if you've paid for that out of your per diem, as outlined, and therefore you live on $1,280 a month.
I've got a great idea. Why don't we have folks submit receipts to receive their per diem to verify they used it for the purpose they're supposed to?
That would be fine. I'm not sure how that gets at the campaign finance.
It would avoid the double dipping. If you know you have $91 per day, and you can use up to your $91 per day, and if your rental and if your food and your mileage expense for that day is $91, you know more than that, you only get reimbursed up to $91. If it's less than that, you only get the amount you get. That way the state could save some money and you'd make sure there's no double dipping.
That's true, but it would not be a per diem,
right?
In that case
it'd be a reimbursement up to $91.
That would still not get at the issue of when you can and cannot use campaign funds. But
I'm being facetious here, Representative. What I'm struggling with is I don't want to tell you how to use your money. I don't want to tell Representative Thatcher how to use their money. I understand the concept and I get it. I just don't want to at that, Representative Holtby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure I do either, but I'm just going to try one more time on another idea after listening to this. I'm thinking that maybe we should require accounting for the expenses over $91 if you're using campaign contributions to supplement your expenses during legislative session. It's not really saying what per diem is, but it's making you be transparent that you're spending campaign contributions during session for expenses that your $91 haven't covered. So you would have to provide that accounting when you're using campaign contributions in excess of the $91 per diem.
I have an idea. What if directed the Secretary of State to have a little box that you check that says anytime you spend money on a dinner or anything like that, you check the box that says that day I also received a per diem. That way the public would be able to view the days you received per diem and you wrote a check for another purpose.
But you're saying in that case you could still continue to receive, you could pay for an unlimited number of those dinners.
You bet. You're accountable to the citizens who elected you. You're accountable to the people who contributed money to you because they can look at that C&E and see how you spent it and know the other uses of the money you had that day.
That would not ban double dipping, as I understood the way the Speaker and the Democratic leader defined it.
But it would make you accountable to the folks who elected you because they could pull your C&E up and they would see that check mark next to that contribution that showed you also received a per diem that day, and at least they could ask you, why did you spend that campaign money on that, knowing that you received $91 that day?
I just don't think, Mr. Chair, that gets at it, and I would encourage legislative council to reread the per diem statutes, because the definition of per diem for the interim and for the session is almost identical language. There's not this distinction between one is for actual expenses, one is for just like a salary supplement. In both cases, it talks about the per diem is provided for each day the legislative member is engaged in interim committees or for each day the legislative assembly is in session. Same exact language, reference to the same exact code in the IRS.
I'm open to this. How do we account for it? Tell me how to account for it.
I just think we specifically say it. You may not expend campaign funds or funds from your campaign committee for any expense that you ever for which you've received a reimbursement. Period.
So, okay. Well, let's. Representative Kitts, Chair Kitts. Let's keep thinking through this.
We're a dog chasing its tail. If in fact Representative Hunt wants to do that, you've got to define per diem and exactly what it can be used for. Every permissible excuse or expenditure the per diem is used for. Because otherwise, if I use my per diem and I go buy a shirt, I'll use this example. If I use my per diem to go buy that new shirt that I spilled V8 juice on and it's $91 at Nordstrom or wherever I decide to buy that, I've exhausted my per diem. So then, if I have a hotel room that night or a meal that night and I pay for it via a campaign credit card, which is a permissible expenditure under the Secretary of State's rules as is, then you would have to list stained shirts or clothing under an acceptable use of per diem.
I trust the IRS. I'm sure the IRS has defined this already. I trust that definition. We don't have it in front of us, but I'm sure however the IRS has defined per diem is fine and adequate for our purpose.
If I may follow up?
Yeah.
Thank you. The other issue at hand here, and not to beat the dead horse, but we are entirely digressing from campaign finance into per diems and salaries. any expenditure that is made, whether you're in session or not in session, is required to be reported with the Secretary of State. If, in fact, what you report that you spent money on, you did not spend money on, it is with the Secretary of State, and you will be prosecuted for that. I would also say that if, in fact, you spend money on per diem, or your per diem is received, and you pay out of your campaign for housing, for example, while in session, which is a permissible use. But by God, if we want to require people to pay two mortgages to serve in this body and become the most elitist institution in the state of Oregon, we can do that. But you also, if you use your campaign to pay for that housing out of your campaign, you have to declare it as income with the IRS. So you are paying taxes on that money currently. And if you're not, I would encourage you to amend your IRS tax form because you are required to do so. I mean, this process, so it's either leave per diem as a supplement of your income or define what exactly per diem can and cannot be used for and ban that from being reimbursed through your campaign. It is that simple. Those are your only two options.
You know, the other thing I would throw out is perhaps a separate bill could be introduced that would prohibit specific uses of campaign dollars.
And that's already defined with the Secretary of State, where there's prohibited uses of campaign dollars very clearly in the manual.
And attack it from that point of view. Because I struggle with, Representative, I get what you're saying. I get it. I struggle with how to not be telling you how to manage your per diem, you know, to tell Rep. Thatcher to use her and me how to use mine. But I would have no problem with a different piece of legislation that outlined what campaign dollars can and cannot be used for, and perhaps that's the way to get at this double-dipping issue.
Mr. Chair, we told the public, or at least the Speaker and the Democratic leader did, that through this legislation we're going to ban double compensation for any expense, period. Based on the interpretation we're getting today, when I read this language earlier, I had the same interpretation that Representative Holdley. Well, this, I actually thought, well, that takes care of that. But the definition that we're getting, that somehow there's a segregation magically between interim per diem and legislative per diem, does not, I mean, as Representative Kitt said, it addresses part of the issue, but not the other part. We will have not banned double compensation for any expense.
That's not true. It outlines specifically that you just said that we did not ban double compensation. What Ted's saying is if you're required to come down here and you're paid mileage, you can't reimburse yourself for that mileage.
Right.
Double compensation. What Ted's saying is if you come down here on that specific day and you've incurred expenses above and beyond the 91, you can't be reimbursed. But what he's saying is that during the legislative session, because it's a requirement to be down here all the time, that it's viewed as a subsidy, I guess, for lack of better words, or a subsidy to your income. So that $91 a day becomes a subsidy to that $50 or $40 a day that we make as legislators. And that it's not defined. It can be used for expenses incurred. So you're gonna have to define every permissible use of per diem and ban that from being reimbursed to define what per diem is and what is not reimbursable. That's the only, I mean, that's what you have to do.
Rep. Hunt, share with us your definition one more time.
Of per diem?
What
statute?
171072?
No. I'm sorry, you made mention to the intent of banning double dipping. You say that the intent was to...
Well, the language from the original agreement was to ban double compensation for any expense. And ban double dipping was the headline.
And originally, Representative, what that was in reference to, the big double dipping issue was in reference to, was not being able to reimburse yourself for gas and for mileage. That was the double dipping issue that was originally brought up. That's what sparked it.
I would contend, Mr. Chair, that was not the full breadth of the agreement that was reached between the Speaker and the Democratic leader. And maybe that's where we are, Mr. Chairman. We need to go back to them and ask them their intent. Because we have differing understandings of what the intent of the agreement was.
Well, let me ask this question. Is there a way, Legislative Council, Secretary of State, that we could work towards finding a solution on banning double compensation without creating a tremendous workload for you folks or micromanaging this down to a point to where it becomes too burdensome? Any ideas?
Mr. Chair.
The ones who are going to have to deal with
it. Ted Redding from Legislative Council, we can certainly attempt to draft something that applies more broadly. However, I can't speak to the enforcement piece of it. It seems like it would require the Secretary of State's office to have information about what people have spent using their per diem money so that they could make sure that when a candidate reimburses themselves from campaign funds for an expense related to their official duties, the Secretary of State could determine whether or not the person has also spent per diem for that same expense, which would then be illegal.
In order to have per diem not be taxable, you need to have an expense associated with that per diem. Is that?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's accurate, but I'm not positive.
Mr. Chair, it's 50 miles. If you live 50 miles from the Capitol, it's 50 miles or greater, so 50.1 miles from the Capitol. It's not taxed.
So what if we had a statement that said a receipt for an expenditure shall not be doubly recorded? A receipt for an expenditure shall not be used for... you can't list it on your CNE and then also use it for personal IRS reasons. You see what I'm saying? So if I go and I purchase gas for $50 and I choose to use my campaign account to pay for that $50, I can't then take that receipt and use it to offset my IRS, offset with the IRS.
I don't think you can do that now.
You see what I'm saying, Representative Hunt? I have an echo. You have an echo.
You have an echo.
I have an echo.
Yeah, I thought you were from Aetna.
Oh, that's me. He's too long in Eastern Oregon, my friend.
I'm becoming a fossil very quickly.
You receive a receipt. You get a receipt. Come on up. Throw it up.
Well, I wanted to...
Come on up, introduce for the record.
Way out of this.
Chair Smith, I'm Norman Turrell.
Right.
Again. In 260-407, it describes the uses of contributed money to a candidate. And one is the use to defray any expense incurred in connection with the recipient's duty as an office holder for public office. And that's what we're talking about here, is that there are some permitted uses for doing that. So if you don't want that to happen, just repeal that subsection. So don't let any campaign contributions be used to defray public office expenses. I mean, it's too easy, maybe, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that's really what we're trying to address, because sometimes, you know, there are legitimate uses, I believe, for using campaign monies to supplement legislative business, because legislative budgets don't really cover us to do a tremendous amount of business outside this building.
I agree, and I think your salary should be raised.
Right, but I just want to go back, and I'm trying to address this issue without really changing, you know, our definition of per diem or doing this. And I really think that if during legislative session, that if we have campaign expenditures to cover expenses while we're in session, you have to show that you've used up your $91, mm-hmm. and account for that $91, and so that you've gone over the $91 budget. So now you're supplementing, you're not double dipping. You're supplementing your $91 with campaign monies, but you're not double dipping as long as you account for that. And that's the transparency piece that I think that's all that's needed to alleviate the problem of double dipping. I don't want to get into the definitions and forbidding this use or that use, because you know that will keep us here for days.
Can you say that one more time?
I think we addressed this at the last meeting. We said exactly that. If you're going to compensate yourself some money, demonstrate that you spent the $91. Justify that your $91 per diem was spent. You know.
Right. I mean,
you're going above and beyond.
You're just accounting for that campaign money that you're supplementing the $91 with, and you know you have to show that you've spent the $91 somewhere, and that you have expenses that exceed $91, and to the extent of that,
I remember this now.
You know, to the extent that you're extending it, then you can use campaign contributions to supplement that $91. That's the only way I see out of this, other than outright banning
I want to play on this, Representative Holby. I do remember this conversation a little better. A member who violates the principle of double dipping doesn't have a campaign finance issue. They have an IRS issue. Because if I have a hotel bill for $91 and I choose to write a campaign check for that $91 and keep the per diem, I've now incurred an IRS obligation to pay this $91. Okay? If I choose to use my per diem for this $91, I've avoided the IRS issue, and I haven't used my campaign money. So this becomes an IRS issue, not a campaign finance issue.
And I would submit, Mr. Chair, that it's both. I completely agree in that case. It is an IRS issue, but it is also a use of campaign funds in a way that is personal self-compensation, additional personal self-compensation, masked as.
But if you hold that as personal self-compensation, why do folks who stay in their own home get per diem?
I'm talking about campaign expenditures that are for instance, if I drive down to Salem, under the definition we're talking about, I would be able to use my campaign money to pay for gas or mileage.
Correct. But then your per diem becomes taxable.
My per diem already is taxable. So I'm less than 50 miles from the Capitol. 47 to be exact.
So what do you want to do?
I guess I would suggest that we go and have a consultation with the Speaker and the Democratic leader on this, because I thought they were.
I want us to punch this out. I want us to work through this. I'll have the four of us, five of us, just punch this thing out, figuring out what makes sense, what's the right thing to do. What's the right thing to do?
Mr. Chair, I think the committee's probably hungry, but would the chair be open to standing in the east for an hour and allowing the members to get something to eat? Gather their thoughts or reconvene.
I won't be able to return, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately.
That's right. How about stand at ease for 10 minutes and go up to the lounge and get something to drink?
We're just turning on the heat in here.
Well, I agree. I was hoping that the Legislative Council could, I mean, we've touched on a lot of things in regards to this, and I think there's a way through this situation to basically do what we've been tasked with, which is ban double compensation for any expense, without addressing, the whole per diem issue. I still think all we need to do is provide the transparency to the Secretary of State's office that disallows us to, have double compensation for an expense. I'm not really limiting what the expense is, but at least that's a step into doing what we've been asked to do. And I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring out why we just can't be accountable for those expenses. Once they go over $91 and you use campaign funds, then you're going to have to account for the 91 plus whatever your campaign supplement is.
What if we had a statement that says you cannot use campaign dollars for those expenses you pay with per diem, with your per diem allowance?
That simple. And then per diem would apply interim session, same per diem price.
I mean, I don't know how you're going to come big brother it, but that meets the language.
Well, Mr. Chairman, John Lindbeck, I'm trying to envision if we got a complaint about that, because these things we pursue if we get complaints. So we simply ask the person for documentation
how they spent their per diem that day.
Yeah, which is exactly what all we need.
Without having to go through, without us having to go through the record, the upfront record keeping.
Well, you better be prepared to.
Yeah, without having to submit the record keeping.
Right, right. But you'd have as much should be prepared to submit it at, in case Mr. Lindbeck decides that he wants to ask for it.
I mean, the complaint would have to be that there was use of campaign funds. I mean, if the bill specifically banned double dipping under all cases, the complaint would have to be that there was some sort of double dipping, and then we would have to ask for documentation to see how the funds were spent. The crux of your problem here really is the disparate treatment by the legislature of per diem between session and interim. And that, you know, that's not campaign law, how you treat that disparate treatment. If you need to address that, then you need to address that through however the legislature sets that statute or however.
And your amendment, Mr. Chair, doesn't get into that.
I don't know how you address this issue short of what Chair Pitts is saying, and that is specifying what per diem can be used for. And while that, I think that would benefit rural Oregonians to define per diem, I think it would be adversely, it'd be detrimental to urban folks who live around here.
But Mr. Chair, the language that you just suggested, I think, gets at the core campaign finance piece.
Can you read your language one more time?
You cannot use campaign dollars for those expenses you pay for with your per diem allowance.
And then document what you paid for your per diem allowance with, or at least have it readily available.
Well, you just tell them. I mean,
well, if there's an investigation, if Paul Holby says,
I took my per diem,
gets his abusing it.
I took my per diem and went to Hawaii.
Derek, I would never do that.
You would. I'm fine with. I mean, I think that if Dave is fine, if Representative Hunt is fine with that language, and then, but as a caveat to that, you're going to have to talk about that you must document, retain, similar to the language you already have about bank statements, retaining. And I think you that might even get at it right there. Since you don't file the bank statements, you don't file the per diem, you must have and be readily available with that. So, again, to the retaining of documentation as related to per diem expenditures under that subsection. So it wouldn't be under Section 17 for that. It would be under, maybe was it Section 7, if memory serves? No.
11.
Section 11?
Or
right. Section 7.
That was 7.
Over here. For review, the Secretary may require candidate or treasurer political documentation. Is that? No.
It may be a couple different places. Same idea.
You could put that in Section 17. You could put it in the new 260-200 that we've added, as long as it's in there.
Would it be possible for us to stand at ease for 15 minutes? Maybe if you could either go back to your office, come to my office, type this out, so that we as a committee can, and I would be open with Representative Holby, if Representative Thatcher would, is to take this, what we're talking about here, and either conceptually move it in along with the one that we did before so that we have two conceptual amendments, but at least have a physical copy for the committee at that point in time, and then it'll be reviewed by the full committee. If we can pass this out to the full committee, and therefore Representative Holby, myself, and Representative Thatcher will have something tangible to compare with what was actually put into the bill at that time. So conceptually amended to say what Representative Smith said, with the caveat of the documentation, under the documentation section of this. Would that make sense?
Yes, I could go back to my office and work something up.
15 minutes, okay?
Or they gave me 3.
How about that? Yes, I like that.
I mean, did you guys have 15 minutes to wait?
Unfortunately, my phone is going off from the place I'm already supposed to be right now. If we already have posted a work session for tomorrow at 3:30, why don't we just...
The problem is we're trying to get this bill to the full committee because the Speaker and the Democrat leader are in rush for it. They want this bill out. We have it posted for Wednesday. The staff in the full committee. Is it already posted?
For tomorrow?
Yes. And then this bill is already posted
for Wednesday as well.
So we could meet tomorrow. The subcommittee could meet tomorrow. Give Ted some time. Put this in. Schedule to everybody and then move it out tomorrow for Wednesday. It's still okay.
Representative Wolvie will have a far less colorful shirt.
Here's how you put teeth on this thing.
Uh-oh.
An expenditure shall not be considered for reimbursement by both the IRS and the Secretary of State. That's how you put teeth in this. So what are we going to do? Do you want to get together that you want to stand at ease, or do you want to get together tomorrow one last time?
I think out of consideration of the two members that have to, I could stay here all night, as could you. The two members that have to go.
That doesn't speak for you.
Not your commitment. I serve at the will of the chair.
We just adjourn. Let Ted work through those. Because then he's not rushing. He can make sure that there's legalese with everything.
And then we can bring back the whole amendment as we've amended it tonight.
Would you rescind your amendment for the conceptual amendment, allowing Ted to draft the amendment, bringing it forward tomorrow so that we have a document instead of a conceptual?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say why not. I mean, it'll all be in writing tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll hash this out tomorrow in sub, and then hopefully with those two things, we can get agreement. And
I think these are both important pieces. They can put it in writing. We can take care of it tomorrow and still have it on Wednesday.
Exactly.
Here's where we are. The language is you cannot use campaign dollars for those expenses you currently pay for with your per diem allowance.
Provided the documentation in the relevant subsection.
Yeah. And be prepared to document it.
We are going to then adjourn until
3:30 tomorrow here in the
same place. No objection.
That was painful.